Cindy Scott, a member of Al-Anon. Been in the program since January 1st of 1983. Very grateful to be here. I'm not sure, do you turn the lights down so I can't see you sleeping? You know that bothers me, so thank you very much. I always seem to find that, you know, you look out there and most people are paying attention, but I always find that one person that's just dozing off, and I can't not look at that person. And I know not to look at that person, but I keep going back to that person, and it's just very distracting. So this is nice. This is good. And if I was out there, I'd be in the back row, actually, probably dozing myself. This is, you guys must be willing to go to any lengths. You must be the really sick ones, the ones that had to have two meetings. Your poor little bottoms, you've sat for 2 hours, and now here you are, and I'll try to not drag on. I know that you're exhausted, and you know, the butt can limit what you can stand. So, but thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's beautiful. San Diego is awesome. My hostess, Marcia, took us out sightseeing today. We went to tour the Midway ship, and then we went over to Old Town. Just to let you know that I have some recovery in my life, because those are two things that I really didn't want to do. I wanted to go to SeaWorld, you know. I wanted to go shopping. There's a big mall here. But you said we could bring a guest, and so I brought the reason I'm here tonight. I brought him along, and he wanted to go see those things. And, you know, it's just because of my program today, I had a great time. And I got to tell you that, you know, this program has changed my life. It's changed my attitude as what it talked about. I love the page that they read on understanding ourselves, because the disease of alcoholism is definitely a family disease. And I did not know that. The focus was so much on the alcoholic. It was so obvious that he had the problem. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, he either needed to ship up or just get out. Shape up, get out. I didn't do alcoholism very well on my own. And I got to tell you, I say it's a family disease. I grew up in that family disease, did not know it. I had a stepdad because my mom, she got involved with a man who's already married, and so after I was born, she found someone else, and as we Al-Anons tend to do, we just have this way of seeking out and finding hostages. And I'm glad for what I have learned here about this disease. Because what I've discovered is that I was not the poor victim. I went out and I sought exactly what I brought into my life. I made those choices. The alcoholic did not use and abuse me without my permission. And I gave that permission on an ongoing basis, simply because I didn't know any better. And it wasn't my parents' fault. My mom didn't know any better. You know, she did the best that she could. She tried to provide a good living. She went out and she found her alcoholic who made decent money so that he could take care of us. And, you know, that's kind of the old ideas. I hear them all the time. I learned so much about myself going to meetings and listening to other people share. And I have to say that, you know, I mean, the meeting that we just had before was such a... It's when you talk about yourself that I'm able to identify. The identification, I believe, is the key to my recovery. Because I talked to a lot of people before you found me. And I tried to tell them what was going on. They had all kinds of solutions for me. And some of those solutions were, you've probably heard them, well, why put up with that? Well, why don't you just leave? How do you explain? I couldn't. It wasn't that I didn't want to. It wasn't that I didn't try. In fact, I made many tries, but I always ended coming back. You know, I always ended up coming back over and over and over again. I just didn't know how to stop the disease of alcoholism in my life. And I was, always like to tell this, it makes my husband squirm a little bit, brings him back to the reality. I was 13 when I met my husband. And now I had to tell on myself. Now, I also had a little bit of problem with lying. And I told him that I was actually 17, going to be 18. And so, again, I have a part in this thing. But he was in a rock and roll band, and, you know, it was exciting. My mom, she had me, and then with this other man that she married a couple months after I was born, she had two other girls and then a little boy. And so there was four of us kids. And I was, of course, the oldest, so I was the one that got to do most of the babysitting and taking care of. And, you know, I just hated life when I was a kid. I think Marcia was talking about her childhood and what fun she had growing up and going to school and all the exciting little parties and things that you do. And I never liked growing up. I never seemed to fit in with the other kids. I always wanted a good friend, but I could never seem to find that person that was my friend, because that person always had these other friends, and it seemed like these other friends, I was always in competition. You know, I wanted to be enough. And I now identify that as a character defect that is formed through the disease of alcoholism. What I needed is that attention. I needed to know that of and by myself, I was enough. And I just simply could not get that from my mother. She never got it from her mother, who I'm sure never got it from her mother. So, you know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go back and say, well, it's your fault? And in this program, I've been given the freedom to not have to blame, to not have to find out what somebody else did that made me feel the way that I feel, that made me hurt the way that I hurt. And, you know, the sad thing is that for so many years, the answer, you know, the answer is right within. I had the answer within me all along. I did not know how to identify it. I didn't know how to be able to bring that out into reality in my life until I came into rooms like these. People who understood, who had been where I'd been, but also had picked up the tools that they were given here and used them, which produced some different results in their life. And that's what recovery is. You know, my life was not any worse than anybody else's. And I think that by sitting in these rooms, I always have heard it's worse than mine. And so, you know, it doesn't matter where we've been. And I think, again, the last meeting, there is always hope. There is always an answer. And it's very, you know, alcoholism destroys. It destroys people. It destroys families. It destroys our children. It's a very ugly disease. And yet, God's blessing is that we come in here and He takes our past and He makes it our best asset. And so I continued this, this trek of looking for happiness. And along the way, what I found was Him. And I knew that that was going to, you know, I could leave home now. I didn't have to be the mother to these other two sisters and brother. And I could finally get out there and I could live my life and I could make it better. I could find that place. And so we struggled along. Like I say, he was in a rock and roll band. And that was back in the 60s where they had, it was just fun. It was like drugs and rock and roll. And, man, you know, it just doesn't get any better than that. It's exciting, and they're doing things, and they're going places. And I loved it. I loved being there. I loved the excitement. It was, it was something that I just felt like I was made for. And so I met this guy, and I just knew that I was going to be able to make his life wonderful. I was going to be a good wife. We were going to have these children. And finally, you know, my life was going to be something. I was going to be somebody. I had no idea that we both had a disease called alcoholism. I came from my family. He came from his family. We lock up together, and we had a wild ride. Like I said, I was 13 years old, and so we had a tendency sometimes to get into a bit of trouble. the cops were always following him. I don't know what it was, but you know, it was probably something to do with his long hair and you know, his band get up, and you know, I mean, he was always dressed in these bell bottoms and Nehru shirts, and I mean, he just looked like a one of those characters. And so you know, him and his band were always being watched, and so here I am, and of course I am underage, and so somehow I was always the one that went to jail. Now I don't understand that. Now, he reminded me that it might have had something to do with the fact that I had a big mouth and I never knew when to keep it shut. And this is very true. I had a tendency to say what I was thinking, and I didn't know anything about discipline, respect, you know, respect your elders. I didn't have any of that. My mom worked at a bar at nights, and she wasn't around a whole lot, and, you know, it's just like I fended for myself, and I was in charge. And so when they would say something to me and I didn't like it, I'd just smart back, say something like, well, you don't even know which end is up. What are you talking about? Well, I found out real quick that there was people that it were a little bit more powerful than I was. And so they ended up taking me up to juvenile and locking me up. And I got to sit in there for a few days. And, you know, it's quite an experience. It's very lonely. I could look out the window and I seen all the people that were walking around. And I wanted so desperately to believe that he was thinking only of me. And so when I'd look out in the window of that courthouse, I could see, I thought, I think that's him down there. Yeah, I'm sure that's him down there. I'm sure it wasn't now. But, you know, it's like I just had to believe that he cared. You know, there was, I mean, they would bring me this food and stick it in the door. And this, I mean, she was a big woman. And she was no nonsense. She looked at me and she said, you eat that. And if you don't eat that, then I want you to put it in the toilet and put this tray back empty in the door. And then when you're done, she threw a mop in there and she said, then you mop up your cell. Boy, I tell you what, I didn't like it in there very well. So I kind of calmed down just a little bit, and after a few days they let me out. They let me go home, and they told me, don't you ever see him again. And what do you think I did as soon as I got out? I ran off, went to his house, doors locked. I tried to climb into his window. I mean, I had an obsession, and I didn't even know what an obsession was at that time. But he was my obsession. And so one day at a time, we just kept doing these things over and over. And finally, in Montana, if you had a parent's signature, you could get married at 16. I wasn't even pregnant. But my mom, she's got these other three kids, and she, you know, doesn't know what to do. She's just glad, I think, to be rid of one. And she liked him. It just wasn't fair. She liked him better than she liked me. You know, he was just, and now, of course, I know today, I mean, why wouldn't you? He's an alcoholic. They're charming. They're witty. They're, oh my gosh, you know, you just want to hang around them. And so she just fell for him. She thought he was just the best thing. And so I think that she really felt like she was turning me over to someone who would love me and care for me, and that, you know, she had done her responsibility as a mother. And so we went and we got married. And I had in my head this idea that everything was going to be great now. Now, I had a little bit of trouble with him. There were times that he would kind of disappear for a few days, and, you know, the explanation was like, yeah, he just didn't sit right. And I just knew he was out there with these other women, and you know how the band is anyway. I mean, I knew what was going on, and so I had to really keep a tight rein on him. And once we got married, I figured, now he's mine. And these were some things that I was going to do to shape him up. You know, I mean, I look back at this and it's no wonder. We do take hostages. But I was going to make sure that he had everything he needed. And he was not going to drink. He was not going to be a bad boy. He was going to stay home, be a good husband, and eventually a father. And you know, it's just my dreams were there, just ready to unfold. And, of course, on our wedding night, the very first night of the marriage, I didn't know what was wrong. We had gone to dinner, just the two of us, and We were sitting in this restaurant, and before you know it, a bottle of champagne just appeared. And the waiter who brought it over pointed over there and said, "That's from them." Well, there was his mom and dad. And they were sitting there smiling at us and looking over, and so they popped the bottle of champagne, and I want to say we started drinking it. I had maybe half a glass, and he drinks more, and then he pours another glass, and he pours another glass, and pretty quick, it's gone. So he's got to order another because we're celebrating. Well, I have not had more than half a glass, and I am done. I am ready to go. So we finally, he finished that bottle and another, and we went to his parents' house. That's where we were spending the night before we went on our trip to Disneyland. We are two children. I mean, he just is emotionally immature, and I'm actually physically, you know, 16 years old. And I mean, I'm green. I know nothing. And so I want to go to Disneyland, and he thought that was a good idea, too. So that's where we went. But, you know, that night we fought. I cried. He couldn't understand what was going on. He finally passed out. We wake up the next morning and we begin the first day of our married life. And, you know, it was going to go on and on and on. And so we did the dance of alcoholism. And you know what that's like. It was just one constant trying to get to a drink and me trying to keep him from a drink. And, you know, I didn't like his friends because it was their fault that he drank. And I had all these reasons of why that, you know, he shouldn't drink, didn't need to drink. We centered our life around that. I continued to go to school. He worked. His dad started a farm, and he said that, you know, he wanted him to be the head farmer, and so they would work for days on end, and then at the very, it would rain or something like that, or a field would be planted, and you had a couple days, and he would go, and we'd go into town and get a hotel, because when you're out there, you can't get away from the help. They, you know, they're coming to the door, knocking on the door, and they don't recognize it's your day off, and so we go to town. Well, all we really wanted to do, all he wanted to do, was get drunk, of course, and he didn't want to be around them. I didn't know that, so I'm just riding along, and I'm trying to drink, too, because you know what? It looks like fun. He seems to, it just does something for him, so I'm thinking, well, I'm just going to join him. I can't drink. I end up getting sick and throwing up, and then I say, oh, no, thank you. I don't want to do that again. And I couldn't understand. This is what our fights would be over the first year. It's like, come on, come on, just have another. If you just have one more, I think you'll get there. And I'm going, I can't. I'm sick. I'm going to throw up. It's okay. Throw up and then have another. You'll get there. You know, I mean, we're coming from two different worlds. I do not understand what he's talking about. Why do you need to do this? And you know what? It's no fun. No fun being with a drunk because they think everything's funny. And it is not funny. And then you know that people are looking at you and they're watching. And I am so humiliated. I am so embarrassed. I mean, there was important occasions that we went to where we had to really behave ourselves because, you know, we had to borrow money. We had bankers, and they would have these little parties, and, you know, you're invited for dinner and a couple drinks. There's a couple drinks, you know, when they call it happy hour. Well, so he would somehow drink my drinks, his drinks, and then he'd find some more, and then they would have the dance. And, you know, so he was dancing with this one lady, and she was having a good time, too. But they were out there, and he was twirling around, and then he twirled her this one way, and bam, she went flying across the floor, hit the wall, fell down. And I am just appalled. It's like everybody's seen this. And I look at this guy that we're with, and now today I know that he also is alcoholic, and I said, would you look at him? If that isn't disgusting, I'm so embarrassed. And the guy looks down at me and he says, well, he's just having a little fun. You know, it's just like, I am always the bad person. I am in charge of fun. And, you know, somebody's got to be. I mean, when you've got alcoholics around, you have to have somebody in charge because they just, I mean, they're out of hand. And I mean, there were times he would actually ask me. He would say, listen, we're going to this function. I need to behave myself. So would you please, you seem to know when that line, you know, it's like, don't have another drink, when I've had enough. So if you will just kind of make a signal to me, and you let me know when it's time, and we'll go. I mean, I am so pleased, because he knows now I'm right, and if you'll listen to me, you know, it's going to be fine. I am going to save you. I'm going to keep you safe. I'm going to take care of you. So I'm watching, and I might be visiting over here, but then I'm watching, because that's what we do. And before you know it, you know, I'm looking over, and he's got that look on his, he's got it in his eyes. You know what that look is. It's like all of a sudden it's kind of a half glazed, and it's just sparkly. And I'm thinking, he's there. Okay. So I very subtly, you know, it's time to go. And he just kind of ignores me. And I'm thinking, okay. So I walk around and whisper in his ear, it's time to go now. And he pushes me back and says, what? No. He says, it's not time to go. He says, the party's just begun. And I mean, one more time, you know, I am just disgusted. I am ready to kill. And so when we read in that opening about this is our anger, you know, this is where I got. I could not control alcoholism. I did everything. I tried to drink with him. I tried to follow him around. I tried to give him direction. I have absolutely no idea what's happening here. All I know is that there's something wrong with me. Again, there's something wrong with me. I'm not living up to the potential of being a good wife. If I was a good wife, he would not have to do these things. He wouldn't have to drink like this. And, you know, I swore I would never marry an alcoholic because my stepdad was an alcoholic and he was very violent. He beat my mother up. He caused fights wherever we went. He was a man that I was terrified of. I was terrified because I never knew when he drank. You know, he might be nice, and he might just be livid with rage. And so you always have to watch, and you have to be very careful that you don't say the right or the wrong thing, that you're not in the wrong place. I remember there was a night that he'd come home from work, and all his kids, it was late, and my mom was a good pre-Al-Anon. My mom did things for him. She kept his dinner warm and that kind of thing. She took care of him. And, you know, he sat down at that dinner table and he started cutting into a steak. And all of us little kids, there was all the four of us at that time, and we all were around the table in asking for a bite. And he just jumped up, threw the steak on the floor, started screaming and cussing at us. And, you know, I mean, you just don't know. So I remember, you know, my mom was always trying to keep us out of the way, stay out of his way. Just stay out of his way and it'll be okay. And so you do that. You try to stay out of the way. Now, I sort of did the opposite. And in Al-Anon, it took me a long time to really find my place, to really believe that I belonged here. Because, you see, I was not one of those kind and loving Al-Anons. And if there are alcoholics out there and you had one of those loved ones that was taking care of you, that was maybe trying to keep you warm by putting a blanket on you when you passed out on the floor, and was always trying to make sure that your dinner was served, and if you were late, that they kept it heated up, you know, then God bless you. You don't know how lucky you are. Because I was the opposite. I mean, I'd turn broil on. Do you know what broil does to something? It's like an intense heat, and it just burns it to a crisp in no time. Here's your dinner. Next time, don't be late. And I had a lot of energy, and when I was waiting for him to come home, I would be thinking. And it's kind of like, you know, not so much what they're going to say. It's just, I'm just thinking of what I'm going to do. I mean, I am so angry, I am ready to kill him. And so there, you know, my mind was constantly thinking of how I could get even. My sponsor uses the word vindictive, and I was a vindictive pre-Al-Anon. And so, you know, there were times I was washing, I mean, it's midnight. I'm washing. I've got the, you know, I've already vacuumed. I'm cleaning. I am busy, 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 busy. And I'm waiting for him to come home. And this energy is just building. And I was in the utility room, and I was in the closet, and I just put the broom away. And in he stumbles. And I had that broom in my hand, and I cannot tell you what happened. He came in there to hang his coat up. And before you know it, I am just beating him with this broom, and I am screaming at him. And I mean, he's just like, he does not know what hit him. He don't know what's wrong. He has absolutely no idea what to do with me. And so there are times in Al-Anon that gals come in there, and they talk about the abuse. They talk about, you know, the violence in their home. And do you know that about 95% of that violence stops when we stop getting in your face? I mean, I just could not stay out of his face. And there are times that I physically would step right up nose to nose with him. And I could see the rage in his eyes. And I knew what I was moving into, the eye of the storm. And yet, I just kept taking one step closer. That's my insanity. My insanity was that somehow, some way, that I could make an alcoholic quit drinking. And, you know, through the years, I eventually came into the program of Al-Anon, and he went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to learn how to do it a little bit differently. You gave me some tools that allowed me to treat my children's alcoholism a little differently. And I am so grateful for that, because about the time we nearly split up, in fact is, we did split up, but like I said, then I would come back home. And there was a one particular year there where, you know, we drag our families into this disease, and I took my kids and I went home to my mother. And she didn't know what to do with it, and she hurt because she's seen us hurting. And I was angry. I was not being a good wife at all. There at one point, I was lonely, and I felt so unloved and so betrayed by alcoholism, not by my husband, but by alcoholism, that I tried everything, and I ended up, I had an affair. And that was the bottom for me. Because what happened there was, is I have never seen such pain on anybody's face as I did my husband's. And I was the cause of that. So alcoholism literally ripped our family apart. My kids were having trouble in school. My daughter, the teacher, was calling me in because she was stealing things out of the teacher's desk. And my son, he was having these little, like, seizures. And I took him into the doctor, and, you know, they thought he was borderline epileptic. We came into the program a couple months later, and, you know, that child never had another one of those epileptic seizures again. The effects of alcoholism are so devastating to the family and to the children in particular, because that's what I was. I was a product of alcoholism. I did not know it. I stayed right in that path of alcoholism. I chose an alcoholic. I continued doing the only thing I knew how to do. And God loved me enough to know that I could not help myself. And he brought you to me. And that's what I said earlier. I didn't come to you. I had no idea who you were. And even when I did, when someone told me who you were, I didn't want anything to do with you, because I didn't see how you possibly could have my answers, because you simply do not understand. And I think that's the way most of us feel when we come into our first meeting. By the time we get there, we feel so alienated and so broken, damaged, don't understand why life is so horrible, why it is so hard to find just a little bit of happiness. And I didn't know it was a spiritual disease. I didn't know that what I was really seeking was a spiritual solution. Had no idea. I came to Al-Anon not because I wanted to, but because my husband finally one day came to me and said that he was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said that I was invited. He invited me to one of your meetings. And I say you because I'm used to speaking at AA conferences, and I don't know if there's too many AAs here, but it's my gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous is enormous, because somehow you were able to touch me in a way that no one else had ever been able to do. Marriage counselors, we'd gone to marriage counselors. The church, I'd gone to the pastors. I'd gone every place, but I could not seem to feel like they understood what was going on. And the things that they suggested, I could not do. It didn't work for me. One more time, there's something wrong with me. And anyway, he had found an AA group who understood that it was a family disease. And they encouraged him to invite me to the open AA meetings. I went one time, and I believe that that was just one of those. It's kind of like when Otto talked about how he went home that day. He had an appointment he had to keep. He didn't know why. And I didn't know why I had an appointment with you. But some reason I went. And I was so embarrassed. I walked in there and I kept my head down. I looked at the floor. I did not want to see anybody. I didn't know who you were, but I knew I wasn't going to like you because I didn't like any of his friends. And I heard some very kind voices. And when I looked up, the people that I saw did not look like what I thought an alcoholic would look like. The people that I saw looked like your typical... I mean, there was a little lady called Millie, and she looked like a grandmotherly type. And I didn't have a grandmother. I didn't have a relationship with a grandmother. My mother's mother was a Southern Baptist preacher, and she had disowned my mother when my mother got pregnant with me because she wasn't married. And so I didn't really have a relationship with her. I didn't know my dad or his side. You know, I don't have that family on that side. And so it's interesting to me the way God compensates. God has given me in here, he's given me relationships that I missed out on in my life, like that of a grandmother, that of a father. Later on, the sponsor that I got, her husband, before I ever saw him, I heard his voice, and his voice was identical to my stepdad's. And I had not seen or heard this man in 20 years. My mother left him when I was 8 years old because of some things that had been going on that were not right. And she found out because I was playing dolls with a friend, and I told this friend, and this friend told her mother, and her mother cared enough and knew that that was not something that should continue, and went and talked to my mother, and again, my mother was able somehow to pull out and pick me up and take me away from that situation. And I can tell you again that from being in rooms like this, that that was a miracle. That was the hand of God, because many times in alcoholism, one were unable to do that. My stepdad told my mom if she ever left him, he would hunt her down and kill her. And she had no reason to believe any different, that he would not do that. He was crazy. And yet, somehow, some courage inside of her helped her to stand up and to take control of that situation and to remove me to safety. You know, there are so many places God showed up in my life along the way before I ever recognized that he was there. And that's a gift that you have given me, because you have helped me to go back in my past so that I can clean up those things that need to be cleaned up. And you've helped me to see where God was there all along so that I no longer have to be a victim of my life and the things that happened. I can take responsibility. I can allow God to have those things that are too big for me and to bring in its place healing. That's what we do for each other. We heal one another. And it's God working in us that reaches out and touches us. There's no human power that could have done for me what has happened in these rooms. There's no way I could have come to you, ask you to give me the literature so I can go home and read, and then figure it out and go on. You are part of the equation. You are part of my recovery. And that's why 26 years later, I'm still going to meetings. I have to keep coming back. Not only because what I've been given, so freely given, but because I still need, there are areas in my life that will always need to be touched and healed. Because it's like they describe the onion, we keep taking off a layer at a time. And I have found that, you know, even though I am a damaged person, God is healing those places. And the things that God has not healed in me yet, I find that there's a reason for that. And there are people that come into my life that I have been able to take my past and help them with. And there's such a feeling of fullness, of purpose, of meaning. It's like nothing happened. It's all had a purpose. It all had a reason. And when I can begin to live my life that way, then I can begin to be happy. I can have that peace that I was looking for. I can have that feeling of being worth, you know, of being, that there's a reason I'm here. And I'm glad to be a part of this fellowship. And I, again, cannot extend enough gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was going to not only need you for myself, but that I was going to need you for my children. You see, you have been there. And that's why it is so important to me that I continue to come and carry the message so that people that I give the message to can give it back to me when I need it, but they can also carry it to somebody else. And I want to thank Terry for being here tonight. Terry is someone whom I have sponsored for 15 years, and she's a part of my life. We have walked through some really difficult times, and it's neat to have that support. It's neat to have the love that I came here looking for. And I have found an abundance. And so, anyway, we started our little journey in the program. And I'm not going to tell you it was all easy. Have you ever used the program to fight with? That's been interesting. Well, have you called your sponsor about that? Or this is a good one. I hate saying this. Well, aren't you a prime example of Alcoholics Anonymous? I think World Service would love to have your picture on their bulletin board. I mean, you know, it's just some things, you know, I am what I am. And so if I don't come to you and sit in these rooms with you, you help me be better than what I want to be. You help me be the best person I can be. We struggled and we fought, but you know, I think it was about 5 years when something finally clicked. And I have to tell you that. I hate to say that it takes that long, but for us that's what it took, and you know, there was no other way. I mean, it was one day at a time. It was him going to meetings and me going to Al-Anon meetings and leaving each other alone. What I did for him the first year before I really got a sponsor and got active in Al-Anon was I really liked what Alcoholics Anonymous did for him, and so I began to exert myself again and say, do you really need to go to that meeting tonight? Can't you stay home now and, you know, let's have some family time? I mean, after all, you cheated us out of all those years, and so, you know, don't we deserve something here? And what I didn't know is I was playing with his life. Because for an alcoholic to not have Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a certain death. I've seen it. Been here long enough to see what happens when the family wins. The untreated family wins and says, you know, you need to be here. my husband needs to be with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be in Al-Anon. It's a family disease, and it's family recovery. I cannot be to him what Alcoholics Anonymous is, and he cannot be to me what Al-Anon is. And together, when we are with each other in our programs, consecutive programs, then, you know, we do pretty well. And when we don't, I'll tell you what, we are the same people. And if we spend too much time alone without all of you, it's not a very pretty picture. So we keep coming back. And there's a whole bunch of people in our lives that we get to pass this on to. And, you know, that's what made our marriage better. When he is on the phone with his guys that he sponsors and he's telling them how to treat their wife, then it ends up that I get the benefit of that. And when I'm on the phone talking to the girls that I sponsor, and I'm telling them that, you know, be grateful for sobriety. Sometimes, some days, that's all you have is sobriety, but you know what? That's all right. It's better than what we ever had before. And some days are more difficult than others. But we're here and we have hope. As long as we're here, we have hope. And we can get through this together. And you know, he gets the benefits of that. And those kids that we brought up in this disease, I have the first child that I had, I you know, did the thing that we some of us do, and that is, you know, let's have children, that's going to save the marriage. Well, we had a daughter, and she was just, oh, she was beautiful. And we got along just wonderful for about probably the first year. And then after that, I don't know, I cannot tell you what it is about her, but we just butt heads, and it's like she was so obstinate. We did not get along, and I was just so frustrated with her. And, you know, I had no idea that God knew where we were headed, and he brought us to the program because he knew that we were going to need that to deal with our children. And as I said, I got to do that a little differently. I had a sponsor this time, and when our daughter started acting up, it was great. This is what happens. We go to they had a regional service seminar, and so there I am at the Al-Anon meeting, and there he is. They had it was an Al-Anon regional service seminar, but they had AA participation. He's in a meeting over there with the alcoholics. Daughter is over in Alateen. Isn't it awesome? We are an AA family. We are all in recovery. And so, you know, it's long, about 11 o'clock. We go home. My husband heads for the TV. I go upstairs. I'm washing my face. My daughter goes to her room. And, you know, I'm just feeling warm. We just, you know, I'm so happy. And pretty quick, my husband comes in. And he says, come here. And so I followed him, and we went to our daughter's bedroom. And what had happened is some boys came to the door, ringing the doorbell, and they weren't the kind you'd want your daughter to date, let's just put it that way. And anyway, he sent them along the way, and we were going to go in and talk to our daughter about these boys, and where did she know them from. And lo and behold, he goes over and he puts his hand on her shoulder, because he knows she's not asleep. We just got home, and it was not her. There was pillows in her place. I mean, goodness sake, she just come back from an Alateen meeting. What is going on? And, of course, we're trying to figure out, where is she? How did she get out? She's on a second floor, and we go over to the window. There's one of those drop-down ladders. She has escaped. So what we get to do is we get to lock the door so she can't get in, pull the ladder up, and we wait. And, you know, so we waited, and she came home eventually. And later, you know, she told about how horrible that night was for her. And it kills me to know that my daughter has this disease, because I've been in meetings and I've listened to women alcoholics, and I do not want for her what I have heard that they go through, that they've had to put themselves through. And when she came home, we decided she was too drunk to talk to. So my husband sent her upstairs, did not yell, and, you know, we just decided we would handle it in the morning. Well, we both called our sponsors, and it just so happens my sponsor had a daughter who had, you know, done the same thing. Imagine that. And she helped me to just simply sit still for a while with this. My husband's sponsor told him, we're going to be down there in a week. Just let it sit. I'll talk to her, and then we'll go from there. And Jim and Vinoy came down that next week, and Jim talked to my daughter for just a few minutes and said, told my husband, you get her into an AA meeting. So my daughter started her journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll tell you what, as a non-alcoholic, watching other alcoholic women surround my daughter and offer the love and the understanding and the help, there's no greater gift that you could have given me, because I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get someone I love sober, and I don't know how to stand back and watch them kill themselves one day at a time. And anyway, she got sober at 14 years old, and today she has 17 years of sobriety, and she's got a sober husband. She has two little kids, 1 and 3 years old, my grandkids, and I enjoy a relationship with them. I enjoy a relationship with my daughter. Our family has been given so much from you, and today, Sharon is a part of my daughter's life, and I love you for that. I love you for what you give to my daughter. She has a disease that will kill her, and I don't have to worry because I know that she's got the help that she needs and wants, and I'm just grateful for that you love each other the way that you do. Alcoholics have a love. I do not possess that kind of love. Mine is reserved. I've been cold many things. Cold is one of them. But I am not able to express. I think that's why I gravitated toward alcoholics in the beginning, is because you had something I wanted so desperately. And all my life, I wanted that kind of love. And I was unable to give that. And I find that it is given that to me here. And as you have given that to me, I have been able to turn around. And now I can hug. And I can kiss my kids. And I can hug my friends. And I can say, I love you. I didn't hear those words when I was growing up. And I know my mom loved me. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. But she couldn't say those words. And her mother never said those words to her. And so, you know, we get the blessing here. We get what we need. And I have two other boys that, one of them, the oldest boy, he's the middle child, and he is, he doesn't drink, but he sure likes them gals that do. And I've had my little talk with him saying, son, you know, if it ever gets really too bad, you know that mom goes to Al-Anon. I'd be glad to take you to a meeting. Oh, mom, I don't need that. But, you know, it's okay because I know that I am able to give him something better than what was available to me. I know that I have a solution. If he comes to a place where he's asking for help, I have a solution. I heard my sponsor say one time, I know how to live one day at a time in alcoholism. And that struck me because, you know what? I know how to live one day at a time in alcoholism. I know how to accept the fact that I am powerless over that person I love and their drinking, and that it makes my life unmanageable. And that if I will just believe that God can restore my life, sanity into my life, if I let him, then I can do this a day at a time. I can turn the person that I love over to the care of a loving God, of my understanding. I can place that person in his care. And then I can take a look at the things that I am contributing to that disease. I can look within myself and see the things that I am doing to contribute to alcoholism. I didn't know when I came to you that I was contributing to the alcoholism in our home. I only knew how to react. And today I know how to accept the things I cannot change. And it's all right to accept things that I don't approve of, that I don't like. I merely accept them so that I can go on and do something better than accept them because, well, it's just okay with me. That's not true. It's not okay with me. But I know that I can't change it, and so I need to look at what I can change. And I can share this with someone. And that's going to help me see the reality of my situation, and I can ask God to remove those things that stand in the way of me being helpful to that person. And I can make any amends that I need to make so that I can be right, so that I don't have to block the sunlight of the Spirit, that I don't have to block God's power from my life. I could not, would not say, I'm sorry before I got to you. And you could ask my husband. I never said I was sorry. The day that I made my amends to him, I will never forget, because we were driving. I just had to get this over with. You know, we're coming home, I don't know, from a meeting or someplace. And so I said, you know, and he knew what I was up to. And he says, whoa, wait, stop. I got to pull over. He says, I mean, it's like he wanted to hear what he knew was coming. I am sorry. Will you forgive me? Never did I say that, because it was never, ever my fault. It was always his fault. And because of the steps, I have been able to look at myself and find out the truth. The truth has set me free. So now I can do this on a daily basis, and any time that alcoholism becomes a problem, I've got some tools. And as I said earlier, you're part of that equation. I cannot do this without you. And so I owe my life to you. I thank you for giving me a different way to live. I have a younger son right now that was born in sobriety, and he is quacking like a duck. He gets in trouble, and it always seems to involve drinking, but it's just a rare occasion for him. He doesn't drink that much. And that is never the problem. It's always that cop shouldn't have been there. That, you know, if when that cop pulled him over, if he wouldn't have told the truth that there was something hidden under the seat, he wouldn't be in the trouble he's in. It's all because he told the truth. Shouldn't tell the truth. You know, this is the insanity of alcoholism. And yet today I understand it. I don't have to argue with him. I've got to let him find his bottom. I've got to let him find where he's done, where he's ready to do something different. And you help me to do that. I cannot do that of him by myself. And so I, again, have to keep coming back, because I will never outgrow my need for you. And I know that I've talked long enough. I'm going to stop. I just hope that somehow, some way, if you're sitting there and you are struggling with alcoholism, that you allow us to help and love you and share and care for you, because you do not have to do this alone. And there's laughter going on in the room. There's laughter in our lives today. Regardless of what's happening, there is joy, and there is peace, and there is happiness. And I just want to thank you again for asking me to come and share. Thanks for being your patience.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.